Support for Under the Radar comes from Wellwithall. Wellwithall believes that self-care is community care. Premium products crafted for your daily wellness, from sleep support to heart health to your daily regimen. 20% of Wellwithall's profits are committed to leading the fight for health equity. They won't stop until it is truly Wellwithall.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. And now for the part of the show we call Lanya. That's Creole for something extra. No job, estranged from her best friend, and still carrying a torch for a high school buddy who has no idea how she feels. The fictional tech entrepreneur Sarah Che put her life on hold to create her new app about death just when everything blew up. Suzanne Park's funny, witty, romantic comedy serves up a life-altering pivot for Sarah that leads to an even sweeter, happy ending. Suzanne Park is the author of four romances, including her latest, One Last Word, and our May selection for Bookmarked, the Under the Radar Book Club. The Korean-American writer is also a comedian, winner of the Sierra Mist Comedy Competition, and a semifinalist in NBC's Stand Up for Diversity Showcase in San Francisco. She graduated from Columbia University, and she has an MBA from UCLA. And Suzanne Park joins me now from Los Angeles. Welcome to Under the Radar, Suzanne.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelly. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you about your book, which I loved. It's so great. And what a clever premise, which I'm about to have you describe for our audience. But it's just written so beautifully. Love your main character and all the side characters. I just enjoyed it. It's an enjoyable read. So I want to put that on the table first. And let's begin by your describing the premise of the story.
Sure, and I'd be happy to. So the story follows Sarah Che, who develops an app called One Last Word, which allows you to send your final messages to whomever you want after you pass. And when another Sarah Che passes away and her obituary is posted online, our Sarah Che's drunkenly drafted messages in her outbox all get sent out. And they're released to her ex-best friend, her overbearing parents, and to her former high school crush, unrequited love, Harry Shim, who is a VC phenomenon, and he is actually part of this mentorship program that she ends up applying to, and then he's assigned to be her mentor.
So you got the summary, everybody listening. So before she gets to the mentorship and the running into the old boyfriend and the paying the price for having drunkenly sent out these messages, Sarah Che loses her job. Well, she doesn't really lose it. She just walks out because she's had it. She's obviously very smart. She's been doing a lot of work in the tech firm that she's in. I think a lot of women will recognize that she's been doing some of what is called the cleanup work in the office. And, you know, they're happy to let her do that. And yet she's not advanced. And so she was finally at a point where she had this app that she wanted to present to the company for them to consider supporting. And it was just the worst kind of conversation with the folks in the room. And I wanted my listeners to hear a little bit of you on the page. So I wonder if you would read from page 7.
I'd be happy to. Bryce rolled his eyes. I disagree. We have tons of good people here, though maybe some are not a good fit here because they're cut from a different cloth than us. There are two types of people at this company, idea generators and doers. All we're saying is, right now, we need fewer of the former and more of the latter. He looked at Marcus. They both crossed their arms in sync. Marcus focused his attention on his laptop screen. Are we done here? If we are, we can end early, and then we won't be behind with the rest of the afternoon meetings. I looked at Seth. No way. I needed the final word. Actually, one last thing. I'm an idea generator and a doer. I'm looking for more strategic opportunities because I've done a ton of non-promotable work for this company, a disproportionate share, I might add, and I want to grow. When I started at this company, I thought the best way to get established was to offer something this place was missing. Efficiency and order, I created processes, work streams, collaboration tools, It's thankless work that no one wants. And it continues to get dumped on me because you all think I'm only a doer. I'm also creative and passionate. I'm ready for some more responsibility. I've already gained whatever knowledge and skills I was going to, so now I need to move up and out. It seems my only option is to leave this company and take my idea with me. Sure, you can have it, no problem, Marcus scoffed. His tone quickly changed when he saw my face and knew I was dead serious and not bluffing. We're not against you. You've got drive and ambition. You seem like a hard worker. We don't see you as an idea person. We're looking for big, scalable ideas, not this. Remain calm, Sarah, centered. Give the impression that you're willing to have an open discussion without an ounce of pettiness, because that's what a senior leader would do. Unbelievable. I used all my strength within me to swallow the remaining words teetering on the tip of my tongue. When I didn't respond as he expected, he said, "Let's not get hasty. You're overreacting and letting your emotions take over." What? I was most certainly not doing that. I had taken great care to mirror their body language, to match their tone, all while being careful to respond the way a confident leader would. No, this was not okay. I refused to work at a narrow-minded company that threw around microaggressions like it was Gen Z influencer slang. Pushy? Overreacting? Really? Would you even say these things to men in the office?
That's my guest, Suzanne Park. She's reading from her latest novel, One Last Word. And despite that really interesting scene, which tells a lot about the situation that Sarah, the main character, was in before she decided to quit, this is a funny book.
Yes.
It's a pretty funny book. But we rarely see a funny book set in the world of venture capital fundraising. That's a new thing for a lot of people. And though we do sometimes get a chance to see women in the situation where they are obviously not valued or perceived as someone who should be valued, what drove you to this? I mentioned that you have an MBA, and I was wondering if you were privy to this kind of scene happening with friends or other folks, and thought this is a great thing to put in a book.
Yes, for most of my books, especially the ones that focus on the adult market, I do a ton of research. They're all focused on women in the workplace, and I have friends in all different industries. And for this book, focusing on the tech industry as well as venture capital, I did have numerous conversations with friends who are in the startup world, also people who have pitched their businesses to try to get funding, and also folks on the VC side who are the ones who actually give out the funding. And when I'm speaking with all of the breadth of people that I had interviewed, a lot of this came down to having brought up the fact that in the VC market, it's very, very male dominated. And only, for example, only 2% of VC funds find their way to women. And of that share, it's always in lower amounts. And just speaking with people who see this inequity, it was really eye-opening. And it hadn't changed either. I had this idea actually back in 2016, 2017, when there was a lot of Me Too allegations in those industries. And then, you know, fast forward to when I actually needed to write the book, I had seen that not much had changed. And it was just something that I felt like I needed to write about. And I myself have worked in the tech industry for a long time, and I had some experienced some of these injustices happening behind the scenes, where you know, I'm one of the few women in a meeting full of men, and seeing the microaggressions take place and experiencing them myself. I definitely included those in the book as well.
Mm. Well, it actually let your character, Sarah, be put in a position where she had to really fend for herself with no job and stand up for what she, the work that she had done on this app. However, after drunkenly sending out some quote unquote test messages, they weren't supposed to go anywhere. Here she is. And I kept thinking about that thing, that exercise that a lot of counselors tell you to do, write the letter, get all your aggression out, and then put it in a drawer and never send it. And that seems to be an updated version of what happened here.
Yes. I think when she was writing all this stuff out, she was trying to show the types of messages and the breadth of messages she could send out. And she was with her sister when she's writing these drafts. And, there's hijinks there too. Her sister's meddling as well. But I remember thinking, who would you want to say your last words to? You could think about your family, or in Sarah's case, she had a ex-best friend and she ghosted her, and she just wanted to know why and kind of get that off of her chest, saying, I thought our friendship meant more to us, and I'm very sad about that. And then you have the unrequited crush too. You're thinking, if your messages aren't going to get sent out, why not pour your feelings out in a draft message? And of course, because of the types of books I write, I think, what could I do that's even worse for the character, and keep upping that? And then I thought, oh gosh, it would be really awful if all of them actually got sent out. And that's how the story unfolds.
Well, and as you've described, Sarah, she's not someone who, she lives a lot in her head. She doesn't say a lot of things that she probably should say or could say in certain situations. So this forced her into a whole other situation, because it's out there now, what she's been thinking.
Right.
And people had to deal with it, including her parents.
Yes. And I think for her, because she holds it all in, and her goal is just to get from point A to point B, I've been conditioned to work hard and get good grades and work hard at work, and I'll get promoted and my life will go in this trajectory that's predictable. And then when all of this falls apart and crumbles around her, she sees that what she had thought in her life as her life plan isn't actually turning out the way she thought it was. So the whole story is about her not only just figuring out what she wants to do career-wise and in romance, she also has to figure out, is her life outlook even aligned to where it should be? Because she had believed all these things before, and now she's seeing that what she had believed is actually not necessarily true.
So as I've said, the book is very funny, and I am always... I don't know. I could never write dialogue to begin with. That's just not my thing. So I find it really fascinating when somebody can write funny dialogue, because as we all know, humor can strike different people differently. And so what does it take for you to put that on the page, put something on the page that has to be universally humorous, or you feel that it will be anyway?
Humor is something that's difficult to convey and also put on the page. I've had people ask if I would want to do conversations or talks about writing humor. And honestly, as somebody that was a former stand-up comic, it's actually especially hard for me, because I have, it's like humor started for me as joke writing, and then now has evolved into storytelling in a way that, you have to see it only on paper and not visually on a stage. So my own comedy has changed quite a bit. I think that dialogue, writing funny dialogue and humorous dialogue, is something that is probably more easy for me than writing some of the more serious scenes where, because it's very hard to convey seriousness when you have a comedic book. And so I try to keep that balance, so that you are interested and entertained by the story, but then I'm able to couch a lot of serious topics with humor, so that it's easier to digest on the other side. Whoever's reading the book will walk away saying, oh, this book has some depth that I was not expecting, and I get what she was doing. But with dialogue itself, it's hard to say, because when I talk about humor writing, I say a lot of the things I learned from stand-up still apply to writing fiction, humorous fiction, in that it's a lot of it is beats and timing and word choice. Sometimes it's just a matter of a callback to a previous joke to make the two people in dialogue laugh about something. Sometimes it's just so specific that it's only a joke between these two people, but it gives a nod to the reader that they are included in the joke. So it's hard to even pinpoint anything, but I will say that my time on stage really did help me figure out how to tweak certain jokes and certain kind of implied humor that you probably might not get in other books, just because it's all of it's lifted from my time on stage.
Well, you said it was hard to do. I would think it would be easy to do because you have all of those references as you've described, but it's still difficult to do?
I think so, because when I'm on stage, I can use my arms and, you know, use certain inflection to convey humor in ways that you can't do on a page. So when I'm writing out, and I try not to write out in public because of this, which is when I'm trying to write out a scene and it has some action to it, or has some, you know, sighing, or, you know, rolling of eyes or whatever, I do all of that just to see how that would play out on the page. And so you see my arms flailing, you see me, you know, shrugging my shoulders and, you know, gesticulating wildly in a coffee shop or in a library. And I stopped going out in public because I know I do this just to see if the emotions and all that make sense for the two characters. And I don't know if it's what like other authors do, but I definitely do it, and because I need to make sure that it lands right on the page.
Well, it works very well, and it particularly works because, see, you have to do this for different characters. If you're on stage, that's just you telling your stories, but you have to do this now through what would be the normal actions, physical actions, through many characters. And so that's what makes it so fun, because certain of your characters, you, as we've come to learn them, we know they'll react in this way, and that, you know, it's funnier still. So I love that about it. But I think you're the first author I've ever talked to who went from stand-up comedy to writing romance. I've had other people write other kinds of books, but not this. So this is pretty interesting. If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley, and my guest is Suzanne Park, author of four romance novels, including her latest, One Last Word. It's our May selection for Bookmarked, the Under the Radar Book Club. Now, May is AAPI month. We celebrate Asian heritage. And so this is great because the characters in your book, many of the characters in your book are Asian and Korean specifically. Sometimes people who come from a certain group take great pains at the beginning to tell me on the page that's what's happening. I don't think I knew until I'm in the book that I said, oh, okay, everybody's Korean. You know, that, because you then had some references to culture and other kinds of things, which I love. This makes it richer for me. But that's a choice. And I wondered if you do that deliberately or you're not even conscious of it. It's just how you generally write your characters.
I think it depends on the story. For this story, I didn't think I needed that because other novels that I've written, ones that are more focused on Korean food, for example, or ones where the actual racism comes into play in the workplace pretty early, you get that immediately in the reader's face early on in the story. But for how Sarah's story unfolds, I didn't think I needed that. I knew it would come out later, especially as she has to deal with the aftermath of sending messages out to her parents. And she's living with her little sister, Gia. She's living in Gia's closet, actually.
Because she doesn't have any money now.
She doesn't have any money. She's in dire straits. But so she ends up having to deal with family culture and being Korean, all of that while she's trying to figure out how to become a full-fledged adult. And, you know, you hear the term adulting, but this book really is about that, where you have to figure out in your life in your 30s how to survive in the workplace if you're not seeing positive progression and want to do something new.
So what kind of response do you get from folks who are, you know, come to the book and don't know the characters or that? I As I said, I personally like this. I'm also an African-American woman, so this appeals to me greatly. I'm interested because some people feel like I should just not give my characters any kind of very specific ethnic descriptions and just let people go with it. And I happen to disagree with that, but I obviously you do too, because that's what you write. But how important is it for you to make sure that this culture is expressed in the book?
For all my books, I do have main characters who are Korean American. And for me, it's a blessing and a burden sometimes to think about a representation and making sure that it's, I'm representing my Korean American peers, but also in a way that it's not the same character. You're getting a caricature of anybody over and over again. I've written 7 books total, 3 in the young adult space, 4 in the adult space. And for each book, I have to really thoughtfully think about the type of character, the main character I have, and what type of qualities and attributes they will have to persevere in the end. And, representing the Asian diaspora, it's very hard to, make sure that people don't walk away saying like, oh, all her books are the same. So I want to always make sure that I have some breadth, like enough breadth and depth, and that Asian Americans who read this feel like they're being represented too. And then maybe not directly them, or it might be somebody they know. But for this book, I do know that because she's a little bit older than the characters that I've written in the past, she's 34. There are some things that she's concerned about that, mainly how to kind of restart her career that is a huge focus. And then when she realizes how embarrassing it is that all of her messages got sent out and she has to deal with that, that's also a lot of burden that I place on the character. So while she is a Korean American dealing with all this, I don't think it's as front and center as it is in some of my other books.
Mm. What do you want readers to take away from the book?
With all my books, I like to show that marginalized characters can have their happily ever after moments. And that I think that I want to show that women can do hard things. And I feel like those two come clear in this book, One Last Word. And I also just want to make sure that, readers, when they read this book, they feel like they were entertained, but then also see the depth and the layering that I've put into the story. So they see that there's more to it, specifically the commentary around tech and VC, and see that that is a place that needs a lot of work for it to have more equity.
Well, it's very funny and enjoyable, even though it's got these other things in there that we need to think about, give a little pause to and think about a little bit more broadly. But I enjoyed it very much, Suzanne.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having taken the time to read this, and I'm glad that you're entertained by the story.
I am. Suzanne Park is the author of 4 romance novels, including her latest, One Last Word. It's our May selection for Bookmarked, the Under the Radar Book Club. It's available in bookstores and online now. That's it for this week's edition of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Listen to us online at GBH News or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on X, formerly Twitter, and Facebook to stay up to date with our programming. Under the Radar with Callie Crossley is a production of GBH, produced by Jesse Steinmetz and engineered by Dave Goodman. Our theme music is Fish and Chips by We Are Two Saxies, Grace Kelly and Leo P. Listen again on Wednesday and see you here at 6 p.m. next Sunday for a new episode. I'm Callie Crossley. Thanks for listening.